What's smooth to the touch, features a great big set of spectacles, and is a hot shade of neon salmon. No, it's not a British tourist already melting on an Aussie beach pre-Christmas. It's the new Monocle Forecast. We'll be flipping through our very fresh pages and suggesting what to buy for the holiday season on the special Christmas market edition of The Stack. This week on The Stack, we get into the festive spirit as Midori House opens its gates for the annual Christmas market. Glühwein, reindeer, and yes, plenty of magazines to peruse. We'll be getting an exclusive first look at two new magazines. We'll crack the spine of Fiera, a magazine devoted to the world's design fairs.
The idea with the magazine is that it's going to be a journal of record of this area of product and interior design rather than a kind of quick report that a lot of the design magazines carry.
And we'll also reveal our very own brand new creation, Monocle's just published annual magazine, The Forecast. I'll speak to our editor, Andrew Tuck, on what we saw as a gap in the market and also the general state of the newsstand. All that and plenty more besides on this 119th edition of The Stack, Monocle 24's dedicated print industry review and analysis show. Hello, this is The Stack with me, Tyler Brulé, coming to you live from Midori House, which, as we speak, is buzzing with stall holders putting the finishing touches on their suitably seasonal stands. One stall that no Monocle Christmas market or summer fair could possibly do without is Jeremy Leslie's Mag Culture stand. Always stocked with the best in print today, Jeremy can add his very own creation to the offering. As you heard in the intro to the program, Fiera is a beautiful biannual magazine discovering talent at the world's design fairs from Confessions of a Design Geek's Katie Tennigan and Jeremy, the founder and creative Mag Culture, are both here. Welcome. Good to see both of you. Just to start off, the idea of actually doing a magazine which is devoted to trade fairs, where did it come from?
It came from Katie. If you've ever met Katie, she's one of these people that's a force of nature. She's a very strong blogger on the subject. She, for several years, has been visiting all the design fairs, and whereas I think a lot of coverage of these fairs is quite just certain things bubble to the top when you read features in certain design magazines, she goes for the complete nature, the complete coverage, and she's been doing this online, and she wanted to move into print, so we came together with the shared interest in blogging. I think just recently you had Patrick Burgoyne talking about this interesting idea of people online moving into print. She wanted to do that, so we came together to make this magazine.
Was it something just because trade fairs are so exhaustive? You go to Dusseldorf, you go to Cologne, you go to any of these cities, which are these major hosts, and there's just countless halls. And as you said, people tend to go to the premier hall. They sort of look at all of the sure bets. So was it about sort of being a little bit more forensic about it? Was that the gap that she sort of established?
Absolutely. I think forensic's a good word for it. There's the beginning feature you're just flicking through there is called Kaleidoscope, and that is a very complete overview of everything she saw at the four design fairs that she covered that she thought was worth considering interest. Rather than, I think a lot of these fairs are quite PR and press release led, and so a lot of the same things bubble to the top in the coverage.
And just when you look through it, and of course it leads on a design note, there's reports from London, from Prague, from Vuj, from Kortrijk. It almost strikes you right away, though, that this is something which is, could lead itself to auto fairs, all kinds of things. And it's great that it can start on a design tip, but you just think, it's kind of endless, because we'll be talking about our new project with Andrew in a little bit, but it was great. We went to a fair in Forecast called Medica, which is in Dusseldorf, which is just, if you want to build a hospital, that's where you go.
Right.
If you want to build a dentist practice, it is that sort of niche.
Yeah.
Do you think that there's, as one of the co-partners on this, that it can even go that deep, or do you want to keep it, I shouldn't say limited, because there's no shortage of design fairs, but...
I think, from Casey, my point of view, we're very interested in this area. There's no big plan to move it on beyond that, but I can see, these fairs, as you say, are extraordinary things. There is so much stuff that's produced, so much effort goes into making them, and then a few days later they're all taken down and dissipate and everyone goes home. So there is something to be said for recording them. We want to get that across in the magazine with the front cover and the end papers of feature the making of the fairs. and sort of portray the kind of temporary nature of them.
And I also want to bring in our other guest this morning, Liz Haycorp, Associate Editor of Weapons of Reason. Good morning.
Good morning, Tyler.
You're just back from a trip from Japan, and we can sort of reverse your stack because you've got some Japanese titles under there. But for people who aren't familiar with Weapons of Reason, maybe just set it up for us.
Okay, Weapons of Reason is a magazine to inspire knowledge into action. It's part of an 8-issue project that looks at the giant global interconnected challenges that are facing us. The whole aim of the magazine is to try and break it down so that anyone can understand them. It takes kind of a bit of a storybook feel in that regard, trying to boil things down. And we take the kind of the way that we've approached it is the past, which takes like a long sweeping overview of the topic,
right,
that then moves into the present, which is like what's actually happening, what do people need to know right now. And then we go into the future where we've got two experts who are looking at hypothetical solutions. And I guess the important thing to mention is the first issue focuses on what's happening at the top of the world in the Arctic.
And it's interesting that you talk about this is an 8-part project, which is, you know, it's always curious. It's actually someone puts a date on something. Mm-hmm. And I always think that's fascinating because I sometimes think, you know, maybe some of the best magazines should have a beginning and a fixed end. Was that part of the thinking behind this?
That is indeed. That's our publisher, Danny Miller. He likes to think that, you know, designers in particular, magazine makers, they like constrictions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Providing a framework. I think so many things we did, we thought about and broke it down. So whether the 8 issues, so that you give it a proper structure. You know, I think all good things have to come to an end.
Mm.
And over time, magazines, they change and they progress, and you need to do redesigns.
I think we can all think of magazines that maybe have kind of lived past their sell-by date.
Yeah, absolutely.
But this is slightly different because it is a publishing program based on facts that, that kind of not a limit to the knowledge, but there's a limit to the areas that you're going to investigate in a way, aren't there?
This is it. And I think one of the interesting things is that we've tried so hard to establish what those 8 topics might be, but at the same time we've left some room because over the next 8 issues, the big issues facing the world might change.
Now, have you put a timeline around those 8 issues as well?
There is, it's 2 issues per year. That's it. We're looking at a 4-year publishing schedule, ideally, seeing how things go.
Now, I'm curious because, and I always want to delve into the business and financing of projects. As you said, on one side, if I flip through it, for those who haven't seen it, I should. It does have this wonderful storybook approach, and I absolutely love this wonderful map where you look at the peoples of the top of the world, which if ever there was a poster that needed to go into production, it's that, which is beautiful.
Thank you.
But tell me, how does the financing for this work? Because it doesn't look like an inexpensive project.
It's a not-for-profit project. It was financed entirely by our agency, Human After All. I guess, to be honest, we've been making magazines for so long. We started out making Little White Lies and Huck magazines, and now we've moved into a client servicing agency. And as a part of that, there's still a team of really passionate people who love magazines, want to keep making them. And this was just an amazing way to make something new, use the skills that we have, and just, I guess in a way, it's like a showcase for our agency. Like, this is what we can do. So I guess ideally, we'll have some amazing partner who'll come in and say, we want to help you with this project.
Right.
Something like, is it Makeshift?
Yes.
We've got some brilliant partners helping them out. So that's ideally, that would be the goal, to try and get into as many hands as possible.
Now, as I said, you were just back from Japan. Mm-hmm. We were talking before we went on air. Jeremy, you've got an absolutely enormous buff. And later in the program, before we go, I want to maybe come back with your holiday suggestions and what you'd like to see fly off this table fastest.
Yeah.
Aside, of course, from Fiera, which I know you're going to be putting front and center.
Absolutely.
But where do you think we are right now? It was curious. I was, at a major independent newsstand here. And then, of course, I'm back and forth from Japan, a lot. Liz, you're just back from Japan. And it strikes me that, we've got this you know, this large sort of, let's just call it sort of glossy, the commercial side, which is, you know, same trim size, four or five, you know, different types of paper used by most magazines. And then you have the self-published. And now, of course, there's a diversity of formats. But I sort of feel that there is a lot of people who have followed this sans serif world, underlined, center justified, etc., where you sort of, you know, and there is a little bit of a fatigue now. And I'm wondering, just as we're talking about, maybe, you know, some great things need to go away. Do you think we move into a period of maybe rationalization right now? Do we move into a next phase of people maybe pushing the limits?
I hope so. I mean, I still see enough magazines pushing the limits. I think there is, as with any kind of successful endeavor, and I think, you know, independent publishing over the last few years, it has proven to be a very successful creative area. There are those that come in the slipstream, and there are cliches, and I've railed against that a little bit on the blog and when I talk and stuff about these cliches. But I think I see it, there's still enough interesting things going on, still enough people pushing. And I think now we're getting to the stage with certain magazines like The Gourmand, I think Rap, where they're extending beyond the independent scene,
right,
and creating a new kind of mid-level where they're actually kind of crossing between independent to mainstream. And I think that's where the successful magazines are going to be increasingly moving into. And it's not because these magazines have changed, it's just because they've grown up and developed and matured, and they're reaching a wider audience. They're finding themselves, which takes time. Magazines don't arrive and...
No, they don't.
You know,
just quickly, Liz, how do you look at the state of the market? I guess, you know, jumping, you know, back from, you know, the great stacks of Tokyo to London.
This is it. I think, to be honest, I think I really agree with you in that I have serious independent magazine fatigue in that regard, of all the white space, all that. I think one of the examples that I brought in was from Soen. It's a, you know, I think it was Japan's first fashion magazine. And what I love so much about it is that not only is it fashion and products, but then there's also things that we would think of more like would feature in an independent magazine here, of just little illustrations, fun little notes. There's even like how to make a woolen hat. So there's just, it's like a really nice mix of kind of bringing some little fun elements into a big glossy magazine, which I love.
I think, I mean, one thing that I think is lacking in some of these magazines is entertainment value.
Yes.
I think, and that's an important part of any magazine should be. There's a little bit of earnestness out there, which I think
then
needs to
be a little bit too po-faced.
Yeah.
That's something we found, especially with Weapons of Reason, is because we're dealing with these massive issues, speaking to these big experts, but then we still wanted some element of playfulness, something that people could connect with, and hopefully that comes through in the illustration and in some of the other elements that we put in there.
Great. Jeremy Leslie, Liz Haycroft, stick around because we're going to come back to you right at the end of the program. I'm going to go away for a short break, though. When we come back, I'm going to jump across to the studio and talk to our editor, Andrew Tuck, about our own little launch, Call the Forecast. You're listening to The Stack. Stay with us.
Every Sunday, the Bulletin with UBS goes behind the numbers and the hype to explain what's really happening in the world of finance. Brought to you from the desks of the key analysts at UBS and experts from around the world, the program delivers definitive insights into the people, places, and products set to shape the week ahead. This is the show that explains how a fast-moving financial world really works. Set your agenda for the week ahead. Tune in to The Bulletin with UBS every Sunday at 1800 hours Tokyo time, 1600 hours London time, 11 a.m. in New York. Anytime after that, you can download from monocle.com and via iTunes or SoundCloud. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.
So here we are, Andrew, tucked away in Studio 2, but just beyond probably three walls, even one wall. In fact, we have all of these shoppers. They're here for our Christmas market. And there's this, I think, a rather sort of wonderful piece of print that they can buy. It's priced at £10, comes with a great little tote bag. It's called the Forecast. It would just be sort of interesting to maybe hear your views, because I think it's been sitting in the ether for a while that we wanted to do something else. But the evolution from your side when we first talked about it.
Well, first of all, I've been trying to keep this away from people who have been nosy trying to steal it. And now there's a reindeer outside that might munch it if I'm not very careful. It began, you and me have had amazing conversations about where media is going and what we can do that's fresh and interesting, and how we stay true to those guiding principles, the reasons we started Monocle in the first place, to be adventurous in print, to be adventurous in the kind of paper stocks we use. And we both looked at the newsstand and we realised that there were some rather tired people doing end-of-year reviews and looking forward to 2015, always very contained, always governed in a way by a few analysts and a few kind of bods. And we felt that there was a fresher way of doing this. And it's the same thing we've always done. It's how do you marry great imagery, wonderful fonts, an excitement about turning page with deep knowledge? And so it allowed us to go back to the drawing board. And I must say that working with you is never, you don't have much time on that drawing board. I've barely got the chalk out and we were sending the pages.
Well, true, but I was thinking there was two components to this. One was, we're coming up to 8 years right now. It's exactly 8 years ago that we were starting on issue one. And I've been sort of likening to, as we've been doing interviews about this, to that 7 year itch in a relationship that you start looking around and you think, what else could I do? And this was, I think, very much an outgrowth of that. And then, at the same time, as you said, just everything has been looking, rather samey. And, we spent a lot of time in North America. North America is an incredibly important market for us, both the U.S. and Canada, Mexico too, but more the U.S. and Canada. And you just see that, so many magazines are on roughly the same sort of silky, glossy paper stock. They're the exact same trim size. If they're not stapled, they tend to fit into a very rigid world of being 148 pages or something like that. And it just seemed that at this time of year, you want something which I think really pushes it. And I love the fact that we had this, one of the very first elements of it. It's almost like, when you're building something, you have to think about the materials and the foundation. And that we were up in Helsinki at the wonderful Alvar Aalto Design headquarters of Stora Enso, having this just great meeting about papers. And and one of the starting points for this was looking at good pocketbooks. And we had all of these German and Finnish books just sitting around this conference table. And some of the people from the paper company saying, we would love to be able to use these types of papers. No one's used these type of bookish papers for magazines before. And that's just, it's a great thing. And I have to say, from a company perspective, that we can make that call. It might be a little bit more complicated. We're ready to sort of run with it. And, we don't think about the economics. I mean, great that Stora Enso also became one of the sponsors, too.
And don't you think it's a tragedy? Because I bet, 15, 20 years ago, those meetings were happening with lots of publishers. And now they just don't happen. Now publishers are content to sit on the paper stocks they've got. They're thinking, we don't need to be inventive. Everything's, Well, actually, fewer are believing that now, but it's certainly the last couple of years they've been feeling, everything will go digital. We don't need to invest in print. And that's the strange thing. It's like going into a glorious shop when you're given all these opportunities of the paper stocks to use and how it will print. And I must say the cover is another extraordinary thing. I know that some of our inspiration has come from your travels out east to Japan and beyond.
For sure. I mean, there's definitely, we've looked at how much the Japanese continue to push print. We don't even have to go that far east. We can jump across the channel to Germany as well and see what a lot of big publishers, smaller publishers have been doing. So we have this, it's a very tactile cover. You could spill your coffee on it, a reindeer could pee on it, and it would still be fine. I mean, it has to sort of fall off the edges because I think the rest of the paper is rather absorbent. I thought was one of the great things this week, you were in New York, I was in Toronto, and we've been rattling on about it for 8 years and we've created a whole program around print, but it's amazing how the message is getting through. You had, it seemed like, 15 or 20 minutes on Bloomberg. I had a little bit less time on one of Canada's business news channels. Why do you think we're in a place right now where this is capturing people's imagination? I thought it was just great watching Bloomberg that this had as much airtime as any new app, any attention that they give to Uber or anything else.
The amazing thing was, as the interview wrapped, every single presenter said, can we keep those? I mean, I really want them. And then at the end of it, I would barely got back to my hotel and there was an email from the producer saying, could we get a couple more? And the people up in the galley were saying, could you ask Mr. Tuck, how do we get copies? So I don't think that happens with an app. I don't think that people have that buzz. Yeah, there's something practical and they'll use it and it'll be part of their daily lives maybe. But this kind of created an excitement. And it was also, what was amazing was there was a discussion on air about what was happening to the news weeklies. Mm. And they put up a chart of all the sales going down and down again. And again, why is that? That's, of course, the market's challenge. Of course, there are difficult decisions to be made. Of course, America has gone in a direction that's slightly different to the rest of the world. But it's also because people are not inventing things. It's not, they're not going out and thinking, what can we do that's new?
I think one of the most interesting conversations that we had with one of our brand partners was a lunch at Cantinetta Antinori in Zurich with the new marketing chief for UBS. And he said, of course, it'd be great to be in the magazine. He just got it right away. But he said, what about a bookmark? He said, it would just be great if we could have a bookmark. And then he pulled out a piece of paper and he said, what about a bookmark, but also that it was folded in two parts, so also you saw the UBS logo across the top. And suddenly he just went and created a completely new piece of advertising space that wasn't there in, of course, a format which has been around for, you know, millennia.
And I love the subliminal message, which is, you know your place in the world, you know where you need to be with this bookmark. It works in a really kind of wonderful, subtle way.
You were just, you know, as I said, you were in North America and looking at the state of the newsstand, and I guess juxtaposed to that, you had all of this excitement with you know the likes of Tom Keene and, you know, very respected journalists around the editorial table at Bloomberg. If you do your own forecast right now, we talk about a settle down, and we've been talking about that for about, you know, a year and a half here, how things are maybe starting to equalize a little bit. And is that what you're seeing as well, that people are devoting that much time to print and they realize that, yeah, maybe they have to turn down the volume on, yeah, just, you know, every new app, perhaps every new digital business, you know, is not going to and doesn't deserve to have valuations, you know, in the tens of billions. How do you sort of see, I guess, from this vantage point on this side of the Atlantic?
Well, I think there is slightly two different stories, but I certainly think that there is going to be a realization at some point that these companies need to make money, these digital-only companies. And there is a, you know, there's a renaissance in print. You know, this is why you have your show. This is because every week we see new magazines being published. And I think there's also a kind of waking of the giants, in a sense, you know, the big publishers of this world who've sat on titles for the last few years thinking, I don't know what's going to happen, and I'm all a bit nervous. They're actually thinking, hold on, that storm has kind of slightly passed for magazines. We're still standing. We're still making good revenue. Now what do we do? And I think that's where you're seeing the opportunity for everybody. But I must just say, our cover is a very bright fluoro. The amazing pair of spectacles on the front of it looking at you. And I think that's the other interesting thing, is that's inventiveness as well. And that's when we've seen already some images of on newsstand. It kind of really... it's looking at you.
Mm. Well, if that isn't a call to action, ladies and gentlemen, to get out and find the forecast, of course, it's going to be showing up on newsstands around the world, certainly close to London, just beyond the channel. It's already finding its way there. Of course, you can also order it direct at monocle.com. Andrew Chuck, very good to see you. I think it's time to venture beyond this studio right now. Go out, and we're going to be talking to Jeremy Leslie, of course, of Mag Culture. He's got a stand out here. Good to, of course, talk about our own brand. We'll also be seeing and looking at what he's recommending for stockings at this very special edition of The Stack at the Monocle Christmas Market. We're back after this.
The Globalist provides insight and analysis of the key news and business stories in Europe and the Middle East. Informed, engaging, and authoritative, it's a 60-minute bulletin of news, features, and opinion. Two presenters in London are joined by guests in our studio and all around the world, including Monocle's editors and friends in our Hong Kong and Tokyo bureau. The Globalist also features an extended daily newspaper review with a special guest here in Midori House. And of course, we round up the business headlines with an expert analyst in a key city. All that and more every weekday at 6 a.m. London time on The Globalist.
And you're back with a very special edition of The Stack here on Monocle 24. The Christmas market here at Midori House is just about to get underway, about 33 minutes until we open the doors. And of course, everyone is going to be making a beeline to Jeremy Leslie's Mag Culture table. You've got a bit of a corner location here, and you have to sort of merchandise rather quickly to get things up and running. And also Liz Haycroft is also here. We were talking about her new title that she's been doing with her colleagues, Weapons of Reason. To both of you, in about the next 2 minutes, you've got about 1 minute each. stockings to be filled over the next few weeks, Jeremy. Three titles. We talked about your new launch, Fiera, so we'll park that to one side.
Okay.
Your top three recommendations on the table today.
Well, the three that immediately come to mind. One is, off from the table today, is Belleville Park Pages, which is a tiny little kind of eight-page folded item, which is... and you talk about kind of new things happening. This is just a couple of guys doing a little literary magazine with new writers. They're distributing it through coffee shops. It's £2, it's less than a cup of coffee, and it's just a perfect, intelligent way to distribute some new writing without much fuss.
Excellent.
A lovely little thing.
So that can go in the toe of the stocking, no problem.
Absolutely.
Okay,
absolutely.
What else?
And another one which is very appropriate for this time of year, and I'm afraid it is also associated with me in terms of we've just redesigned it at the studio, but Noble Rot has been a long-term favourite of mine. The only thing it lacked is it takes wine and readdresses it.
Right.
Takes it out of the fusty world of wine writing. The only thing that's let it down has been the design, so it's been a pleasure to kind of lift it up a little bit.
Right.
And it's now, you know, it's great fun, a fun thing about wine and food for Christmas.
Excellent. And one more.
One more, which I haven't got on sale today, but Benji Newman. We're talking about magazines that are entertaining, and this is from Latvia.
Mm.
It does have some of the tropes that we've talked about in terms of independent publishing,
sure.
But it is just really, really a curious idea. It's actually made by two women, but they've invented this guy, Benji Newman, who's an editor, and it's his kind of outlook on a journey from Latvia to England and what he sees in both countries. It's quirky, it's odd, it's imperfect and flawed, but it's fascinating.
Mm. And I think interesting to see something also come out of the Baltics.
Absolutely.
As well.
Absolutely. Yeah, indeed.
Liz, you're three.
Okay, I've brought, as I mentioned before, Soen, which is Japan's first fashion magazine. It's music, fashion, and emotion. And if you're interested in any of those things, I highly recommend it. There's products, there's food, women in music, and they're all, the photography is amazing because it's showing these women, they're strong, they're sexy, but they're not, it's not objectifying them. And it's keeping up with all the new trends, not only in Japan, but all over the world. And not just for fashion lovers, obviously. My next recommendation is Mammoth.
It's gorgeous.
Thank you. It's made by Paper Sky Media, which you may know they made Tokyon magazine.
Yes, and they've got a fantastic little shop in Tokyo as well.
They do. They have the most amazing little studio. They pretty much inspired me not only to learn Japanese and get into Japanese culture, but magazines as well. So to see what they're doing now, making this magazine for Papa, Mama, and kids is just brilliant. It's fun. There's lovely illustrations. You can learn how to dance. Basically, if you've got a kid, recommend it. If not, maybe something like Anorak.
Could
be a nice local option.
Available today.
Very good. Ooh, very nice. Last one?
Last one is Buffalo Zine. Comes from Shoreditch via Spain, I believe. Have you seen this before?
It's a good connection.
It's crazy. To be honest, I picked it up because there was Japanese and Chloe Savini on the front cover.
Right.
It's crazy. It's like 90s style. There's a very like mashed up zine aesthetic, but then... it's just fun, and it's kind of mental.
I mean, is it Buffalo Zine because it's picking up on the Buffalo movement of late 80s? No, it has no reference to that.
No, I think it's
quite random.
It's just a labor of love. There's a letter from the editor talking about how he got into... he saw a woman in a Nirvana t-shirt, and that, in a tiny village in Spain, just inspired him to try and look further. And I think for someone like myself as well, that was... that kind of cultural icon, you know, it's very inspirational. Seeing
and,
that
and Tony Ward on the reverse side, as well.
And it's a little bit derelict, if you know what I mean. So there's a famous 90s model dressed as a homeless man in a very extensive photo shoot. It's kind of gross but very strange, and
it's entertainment again.
It is, and who needs a boyfriend when you have magazines?
I like that.
I love
we might have to borrow that. This is not a magazine on the cover too, so they're having it both ways.
It's crazy, and the format is also very very strange, double magazine.
Liz
recommend.
Haycroft, great to see you. Jeremy, Leslie, good luck today.
Thank you.
I'm sure we might be checking in a little bit later. Our producers today were David Pleasant, our studio manager, Claire Urban. We're also ably assisted out here on the floor by Bill Lloyd. The Monocle Christmas Market is about to open in 28 minutes' time. If you're in London or in and around London today, also Sunday, we are here from 11 o'clock London time right up until 1700. And I'm sure you can ask nicely if you've been doing a little bit too much Christmas shopping elsewhere. If you have any comments or queries, then drop us a note at info@monocle.com. Remember, September, back at the same time next Saturday. And of course, you can always listen again at monocle.com or via iTunes or SoundCloud. But for now, for me, Tyler Blay, goodbye.